Hey there, welcome back to the Etsy Seller Podcast. I'm your host, Cody McGuffey, and today, a very fun episode where we get to talk with Adrian about his story, his background, and how he uses Everbee a lot differently than the majority of people that usually listen to this show. He sells primarily on Shopify, and he uses Everbee to do research on Etsy, finds winning products, finds winning ideas, designs, and takes those ideas and actually moves them over to his Shopify store, where he absolutely scales it, crushes it, so much so that he's scaled well over six figures, one business, well over six figures in like less than 14 months. He's sold a brand before, and he's looking to do a lot more and also help a lot of other people with this process as well. Very cool episode. We do get tactical. We also go high level with the mindset, which is always my favorite. As always, this podcast is brought to you by Everbee, and we believe that everyone deserves the opportunity to pursue their passions and live life on their own terms. We believe in making e-commerce accessible to everyone in the world, no matter where you are, which country you're in, which state you're in, what your financial situation is currently. And we want to make a positive impact in our families and in our communities. Everbee is the e-commerce business platform that helps e-commerce sellers, specifically on Etsy or Shopify, find winning products, optimize their listings, find out trending ideas, and grow their business. Sign up for free, everbee.io. Let's jump into today's show. Adrian, what's up, man? How are you doing?
Hey, man, I am doing well. Thank you so much for having me. It is a huge honor to be on this podcast. I'm a huge listener myself, and I'm just really excited to be here.
No, man, we're super happy to have you here too. You have a very cool story. You have a lot of e-commerce experience, a lot of entrepreneurial experience, probably more than anything else. I think I saw on like on your LinkedIn, this, correct me if I'm wrong, but did you do real estate investing too in the past as well?
Yeah, I still do some real estate investing. So I'm a real estate investor. I used to be a realtor. That was my like past life before I quit my job and got into e-commerce. That was the last thing I did. And it was really cool because I love real estate, but yep. I also really love e-commerce and I wanted to create and unlock more freedom in my life. And that's why I went the e-commerce route.
You know, that's very cool actually. And we've never talked about this before, is actually my first go at entrepreneurship was in real estate investing also. I don't know if you knew that.
No way.
Yeah, it was. We were literally like, I remember going to the corporate 9-to-5 job out of college, and I was like suit and tie. I was pretty excited about it and I loved it. And then eventually you realize like, oh, this is actually not the plan. You know, this is not a cool, this is not the idea here. And yeah. So I picked up Rich Dad Poor Dad was one of my first books.
I love that book.
Yeah, it was cool. But it led me down the path of real estate investing and mm-hmm. that being like the, really led me down the path of financial freedom is really what we were chasing. And I didn't know that we were chasing that or I wanted that. Anyway, so the first go was at like real estate investing. Like I set up a corporation, like my wife and I did it. We like flipped properties in San Diego. We like did bought some out-of-state properties. Yeah. But similar to you, and I want to hear more about your story. It led me to e-commerce actually, which was right. Way, way, way more powerful for what my goals were.
And yeah, so, man. Do you want me to start with my story or?
Can you tell everybody about you first, and then we'll dive into all the good stuff.
Sure. Yeah. So yeah, I was in real estate sales. I was that like unfulfilled 9-to-5er corporate slave for many years after college. And I always knew that I wanted like more out of life. I felt like I was meant for more. And I'm sure a lot of people listening right now can relate to this. They're especially if you're working that kind of 9-to-5 right now and you're trying to work your way out. But I wanted to unlock more freedom in my life because I just, no matter how much money I made, there was always something missing. It was like there was a gap, like I wasn't fulfilled. So I left my corporate job to go into real estate thinking that was going to be the golden ticket. I was like, all right, here, real estate, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. I'm going to do real estate mm-hmm. sales. But then the problem was that I ended up spending every weekend doing open houses. I was on call 24/7 for my clients. There were times where I was on my way to pick up my girlfriend, my now wife, and I was going to take her on a date and I had to cancel on her because I got a call from a client saying, we need to write an offer tonight on a property. And I would just have to turn around and put on my suit and go meet with them. And I remember, I think we were together till like 1 a.m. writing this offer. So I was like, this isn't it. Like I need to unlock more freedom in my life. And I did read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I love that book. But the book that absolutely changed my life, and I recommend this to everyone, and I'm sure, Cody, you're familiar with this book, The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss.
Sure.
I read this book 13 times before I finally became an entrepreneur. It was like my Bible. I was obsessed with it. I just kept reading it again and again and again, and it kept motivating me, and I kept learning, and I was like, okay, I need to unlock more freedom. Like, I was obsessed with the idea of freedom of time, freedom of location, and freedom of finances. And I knew in real estate, I was never going to have freedom of time, and I was never going to have freedom of location, because you got to be there for your clients. You go away on vacation and they're calling you. You know what I mean? So you're working on vacation. Not very liberating, to say the least. So I knew I needed to get out of it. So I decided, I kind of did things backwards, to be honest. My wife, she moved down to Arizona. We're from Vancouver originally, Vancouver, Canada. And she moved down to Arizona for graduate school. And I kind of came to a fork in the road. She was going to be there for the next 4 years. And I was like, well, do I just stay here and keep doing real estate? And then she moves back in 4 years and we do long distance. Or is this like my opportunity to kind of step up and try something completely different? And that's what I did. I literally quit my job. I had no plan, by the way. This is not what I recommend. Do not try this at home. I quit my job. I sold pretty much everything I owned. I sold my car. I sold my guitar. I sold all this stuff. And I booked a one-way ticket to Thailand. And I actually lived in Thailand for 7 months. And ironically, well, first of all, because the 4-Hour Workweek always talked about working from tropical places, you know, being that person sitting on the lawn chair on the beach with your laptop, that was like what I had in my head. Mm-hmm. And I was just visualizing this. I was manifesting this. And I felt like I was ready to make it a reality, even without a plan. So I quit my job. I booked a one-way ticket to Thailand. I moved to Koh Samui in the Gulf of Thailand, tropical island of Koh Samui, because I wanted that kind of like lawn chair on the beach kind of photo. Like, I would look at these photos and they would look like Koh Samui. Yep. So I moved to Koh Samui. I lived there for 7 months. And that's actually where I first heard of print on demand. I was part of a mastermind back in Vancouver with some friends, and they were all doing e-commerce. We were all kind of dabbling in e-commerce stuff, but I'd never heard of print on demand. Mm-hmm. And so we were doing something totally different. We were doing Amazon KDP, and it was just getting really kind of bad. And we weren't having a lot of success. Things were not going well. So they decided that they were going to shift gears and go into print on demand. And they're like, oh, we're going to do print on demand with Shopify and social media. And I was like, okay, what's print on demand? What is this? Like, we're going to start apparel brands. We're going to start clothing brands. And I was like, how? You know, my first thought was, you're going to need to buy a whole bunch of inventory. How are you going to know what people want? How are you going to build an audience? I had so many questions, but we actually decided, first of all, we just got started. We just took messy imperfect action. And my first brand was an epic failure. So I started in Thailand. I started my first brand, and it was in a niche I knew nothing about. And it just, I didn't know what I was doing. I had no plan. I had no strategy. I had no mentorship. And so after that, there was three of us. Like, there was three of us. We were all starting our own brands. We decided that we were all going to invest in training, coaching, and a community to learn like a proven strategy from someone who is having success with their own t-shirt business. And so we invested in this, and get this, within 1 year of investing in that course, all three of us had six-figure businesses.
Wow.
All three of us had six-figure businesses. And something I tell my students all the time is like, success is not a result of luck, it's strategy. Success comes from strategy, not luck. You just need to follow a crystal clear, proven, tried and tested roadmap from someone who's been where you want to go. And that's some of the best advice that I ever got. And that completely changed the game for me. So we had these businesses. I ended up starting a second one in the dog niche, which was super competitive with my brother, because it was always a dream of mine to work with family. I always wanted to employ family. So I brought my brother in. We built a second print-on-demand business. We scaled that up to six figures in 14 months, and we sold it all within 2 years. So I had this main business, and then I had this kind of side hustle print-on-demand business with my brother. And then
you say real quick with that, Adrian. This is amazing, by the way. So much like literally inspiring.
It's fun to talk about, man. It really is. I'm really passionate about this stuff.
100%. I could sense that too. And I think like most people actually listening to this right now are like driving. They're like, they're probably going to work, or maybe they're like in between clients. Maybe there's probably, I'm sure for sure there's real estate agents talking to this that are trying to like have their, you know, have their foot, you know, into another direction that kind of makes money while you sleep. Which brings me to this quote, actually. It's funny. Warren Buffett says, I was thinking about this the other night. He said, if you can't figure out a way to make money when you sleep, then you're going to be working until the day you die.
Ooh,
and I'm like, damn, dude, that's what, like, that's how e-commerce is. Real estate's like this way too. There's a lot of other things that do this, but like e-commerce is for sure this, because you can go to bed with like one sale and wake up with 10, you know? And
totally.
It's like, that's incredible. Continue though. Like, I want to hear like next step in the story. So did you guys end up Did you guys sell the company, like your brother and yours company, like you sold it?
We sold the brand. Yep. We sold it on Shopify Exchange, which I don't think exists anymore. But
okay, I remember that.
A couple of years ago, they had this program, Shopify Exchange, where you could list your Shopify store and you could sell it.
Can we talk about that real quick? Like,
yeah.
How many people listening to this, and I remember being in their shoes also, is I didn't know you can really sell companies. I thought the big companies do that, but at the time I remember when I first got into entrepreneurship, I'm like, oh, so the game isn't just to make money every month. It's actually to build an asset that you can actually sell one day. And
totally.
Then like, that's actually really powerful. Etsy sellers don't think this way a whole lot. Because Etsy doesn't allow you to like, they don't love the idea of being able to sell your Etsy shop. It's actually like it's against their rules. But Shopify, mm-hmm. building a brand, you can do this. How can we talk through like that transaction, whether it was ugly or beautiful? Can you share? How much can you share about this?
Yeah, it was actually pretty smooth. And there are tools like this that still exist. Flippa is one of them. I think it's Flippa. Mm-hmm. That was another one that a lot of people were using to sell their Shopify stores. But Shopify used to have Shopify Exchange. And then I'm pretty sure a couple of years ago, they just ended it. They just discontinued it, but it was really helpful. So what we did was we listed our Shopify store on there for sale, and Shopify had all the access to the backend data. So they could verify the numbers that we were sharing and whatnot, right?
Awesome.
We would talk about all the assets that people were going to get. They were going to get our social media following. They were going to get our email list. They were going to get our sales data. And this is something that, again, I tell people when you're building a brand, like every follower, every email, every sale is value. Like you are always making your brand more valuable with all of these things. You want to think of those as assets, especially your email list, because as a brand, most of the value comes from your email list. Most of your sales are going to come from the owned platforms. I call these retention channels. And the main purpose for email that I kind of teach is repeat sales. The more you can get your customers to buy again and again and again, the more valuable they become and the more valuable your brand becomes. But I digress. So essentially, we just shared all of our numbers. We put our Facebook following, our Instagram following. We put links to everything. We shared our sales numbers. And at the time, we had a winning design that was absolutely crushing it. We made $277,000 in 60 days.
Damn.
With print on demand and paid advertising. So we were using Facebook and Instagram ads to scale up this winning design. And so we kind of sold that peak, which made a really strong case for the brand. And I think, I want to say probably within about 1 month, we got a serious buyer. And we had kind of tire kickers and stuff, but then we got a serious buyer who reached out and we went back and forth. And, she said, okay, let's do this. And we got a full price offer on our brand. Shopify held everything in escrow, which was really nice. Very cool. So it was very safe and secure. Like there was no shadiness here.
Amazing.
And we transferred everything over and it was a done deal.
Dude, congratulations. So, it's a really big, big milestone. I'm sure it was a big validator for you and your brother going into starting this business of entrepreneurship. It's actually a lot of people's dream to actually build a brand, to sell a brand. It's actually, it's a lot of people's like, it's a bucket list thing. Like even if they sell for a dollar, it's like, at least I sold my company. You know, like they could say like I exited this company. In the entrepreneurship world, it's actually a very, very big validator. How are, for people listening to this, and they want to do this and they get excited about hearing about your story. How do they actually value a print on demand drop ship type of company?
Sure.
Like, and I know this is like all over the board, but just
yeah,
high level, is there a multiple? Is it a 5X, 3X EBITDA? Like what is that way?
Honestly, I don't remember how we valued the price.
Cool.
We ended up selling it in the high five figures,
cool,
full price. And this was a brand totally print on demand. We had no inventory, very little overhead, and something we had just built from zero to over six figures in less than 2 years. In 14 months, we got to our first six figures and then sold it before the 2 year mark.
And what do you think your profit was, if you don't mind sharing, like, and feel free if you don't want to.
Profit margins?
Whatever, however you want to do it, like on that 260 in 6 months, were you profitable or were you not profitable? How'd that look?
Oh yeah, we were hugely profitable.
Cool.
I would say that, I mean, not like—
I understand.
Maybe hugely is an exaggeration, but for print on demand, we were profitable. I would say that our profit margin at the end of the day after cost of goods and after marketing was probably about 40%.
Amazing. And you could do
40%
that.
40% profit margins.
Which sounds crazy to a lot of people listening to this because they're Etsy, right, you know, they're only on Etsy, but if actually on Shopify and you do these certain strategies, you can actually increase your average order value, which increases your margins like in a lot of ways. And when you have repeat customers, like you can do stuff like this, you can charge actually a higher price point for your products because you're not competing.
100%.
You agree? Yeah.
100%. This is the beauty of a brand, is that you can increase your perceived value. And when you increase your perceived value in the form of having a website, having a really branded experience, having high quality imagery on your website, having upsells and cross sells, having all these things that kind of provide like a really good customer experience, mm-hmm, you can attract raving fans to your brand who feel like they really get your brand. So I'm a big fan of niching down.
Yeah.
Like that's the first thing I tell all my students to do. First, choose a niche, ideally one you're passionate about, commit to that niche, and then start creating products with that ideal customer in mind.
Mm.
And by doing this, what you're doing is you're attracting raving fans. And there's this really cool kind of principle from Kevin Kelly's book, 1,000 True Fans. And he says, all you need is 1,000 people to spend $100 a year on your store and you've got a six-figure brand.
Wow.
That's it. And if you have the right systems in place, if you have upsells and cross-sells to get people to ideally buy more than one product in their first purchase, which should always be the goal, I believe, by the way, you know, you can attract someone in with a t-shirt or a hoodie, get them to add something else on there and maybe incentivize them with an upsell app that gives them a discount on this complimentary product that, you know in your sales data, a lot of people that buy the first one also buy the second one, right?
That's right.
Show them what they're statistically likely to buy. So by doing that and by marketing with email and getting them to buy again and again, it's not that hard to get people to spend $100 on your shop. Like if you're sending one email a week and you're constantly releasing new arrivals and you're marketing your brand on social media and you've got these passionate raving fans, these followers that love what you create. They love your brand. They love what it stands for. They feel like it gets them. You can have way more than 1,000 people spending $100 a year on your brand.
Because the market is so big. I mean, we live in this global economy where it's like, there's so many people that actually identify exactly with, you know, the fall inside of your niche, no matter how dialed in and down, you know, small you think your niche is, like it's a massive market, very, very likely, you know, it's way bigger than you think, that's for sure. So going back to the numbers, because I like nerd out, yes, like multiples and stuff. So if you did, let's say if somebody does 260,000 in sales, let's say in just 12 months and 40% margins is like $100,000 profit margin, profit. And that equals, that's your EBITDA, right? Which is earnings before, for anybody not familiar with that term, earnings before interest, taxes, and insurance, amortization, then typically the multiple is off of that number typically. And it sounds like if a brand sells for $100,000 or maybe a little bit less, it's about 1x multiple on the EBITDA, which is sounds about right, probably for like a print on demand drop shipping thing, which is beautiful because the beautiful thing is this, if you do $100,000 in profit for the year, from your print-on-demand store, you could actually sell that thing now for $100,000 in a big lump sum. You don't have to wait 12 months to get that. So you could actually sell it to somebody else. And if you do 200,000, it's worth now 200,000 upfront lump sum. And then that's not even including probably like your other assets that you're building, email list, like you can get extra value from all of those things also. So it's a pretty cool way. You do $1 million and all of a sudden, and then you could all of a sudden sell your brand for $1 million too. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's pretty wild, man. Like this is another thing I say about building a brand. Like, you're building an asset here. This could help you with retirement. This could put your children through college. This could buy you a car. It could buy you a house. It depends on how far you want to go with this, right? Yep. How far you want to take it. But yeah, like that's the beauty of a brand, is you can build a valuable asset. And that's why I actually use and love Etsy myself. I'm Shopify first. And then I use Etsy as a secondary sales channel.
Okay.
So, and I have a lot of students that use Etsy, and I have a lot of students that started on Etsy. And I think creating a brand powered by Shopify is kind of the natural evolution of that. Like, if you've found validation on Etsy, if you've struck a chord, if you're making consistent sales and you've got a profitable business, like spread the good word, you know, you should turn that into a brand. I feel like that's kind of the next step, and use both.
Right.
Use both. But what I like about having a brand is that you can increase the perceived value on your website and you have more price elasticity. So, you know, the problem, I don't know if problem is the right word, but on a lot of marketplaces, there's kind of like a fixed price that a lot of products sell for. It's almost like a commodity price, you know? And if you go too high, everyone's going to buy the brand from the shop that's a couple dollars less or whatnot. But on a website, it's not really the same competition, because you're just promoting your own brand on there.
Right.
You're not having, you know, other competitors being featured when someone's looking at your products and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I love both. I think, you know, I had a lot of people start on Etsy and have success on Etsy and then be like, okay, I want to turn this into a brand. Like, I want to build a valuable asset. And I'm like, let's go. Yeah. Let's do this.
That's the idea right there, man.
Yeah.
I agree with that. That's the idea. Like, the way that I've always looked at Etsy is, and by the way, I'm a huge fan of Etsy and a lot of other marketplaces too. I was in Amazon FBA and I was selling on Amazon FBA before Shopify and all this stuff too. And still a fan. But I look at them as sales channels. That's a channel.
Yes.
And your website, your own website is like your hub. It powers everything, right? And it connects, kind of connects everything. The ideal result is that anybody listening to this, the ideal is what you want is you want those arms, those channels to be coming in from Amazon, from Etsy, mm-hmm. from Walmart.com, from whatever. But you want your main business, like your main website, to be driving like the majority percentage of all your revenue, because that's what you actually own the customer there. You can control their experience. You can control the brand. You can control your emails. You control everything in that world. So that is like the ideal goal. And I want to make sure we like nail that down further, because we are not against selling on platforms, marketplaces, but it's in addition to, right? And if you want to
absolutely
start there, scale here.
Yeah, I love marketplaces, and I absolutely think Etsy is the best marketplace, hands down, for t-shirt and apparel businesses.
Okay.
Absolutely. But what I tell people is, if you're seeing success on Etsy, let's evolve this into a brand. If you're seeing success on Shopify, let's take it to Etsy. Like, you should be on both. When you see success on one platform, the natural evolution is to be on that other platform, right?
I have a question for you. There's a lot. Yeah. There's some people listening to this right now that maybe they do have a Shopify store in addition to their Etsy, and they're wondering sometimes if they can sell the same products on both their stores. Which is, we chuckle at this because you're like, of course you can, right?
Right. But
can you do, if you're a Shopify seller and you don't sell on Etsy? We have some people listening to this that only sell, like, have their Shopify site and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you use, like, how do you do product research in order to still succeed for your website? Does that make sense? That question?
Do you mean like design research?
Sure. And exactly. Validate products. How do you validate products to sell onto your website, like Shopify account?
I use Everbee.
Can you walk us through?
Yeah. And you know, it's so funny because I feel like most people think Everbee is just for Etsy sellers, but I would actually argue that it's even more powerful for Shopify sellers because you can use Everbee, do design research the exact same way, and then you can go put those products on your website that are validated. Validation is key. You always want to look for designs that are making sales in your niche right now. And this is why I love Everbee. And this is why I tell all my students to use Everbee for design research. Because what I realized over the years, having coached hundreds of students, is that most people think they have a marketing problem when they're not making sales. They'll select their niche, they'll create some products, they'll build a website, and then they'll start running ads. But they think that they have a marketing problem. They're like, I just need to get my product in front of more eyeballs and I'll start making sales. But I would argue that in the high majority of cases, in my experience, it's actually a product problem. It's actually a design problem. You actually need to have something that people want to buy. Sorry. And the best way to find that is to create for the demand. And that's why I love using Everbee, because what we would do is I would tell my students, okay, here's what you're going to do. Phase one of your business, you're going to select your niche, you're going to create a couple designs, and you're going to build a website. Just keep it all simple. Everything simple. Don't overthink anything. That's phase one. Once you've completed phase one, you're going to move to phase two. And your primary focus is going to be just three things: design research, design creation, and marketing. Mm. And so I tell them all to start with design research. I'm like, before you even think about creating designs, go out there, allocate some time to research designs that are winning right now. Find validated winners. And so what I teach them to do is to go into Etsy, to use Everbee, to type in their niche. So let's say that they're in the dog niche. I would say, okay, just go in there and start by typing dog and see what auto completes. See what auto completes. So let's say they type in dog and then all of a sudden it auto completes dog shirt. Mm-hmm. And what I love about Everbee is, first of all, it tells you how many people are searching for it. So right away, you're like, okay, lots of validation here. I have evidence, proof that people are actually searching for dog shirts. So go ahead, click on dog shirts. And then what you're going to do is you're going to sort by bestseller. And I know that Etsy got rid of the bestseller filter, mm-hmm. but a little hack that I'm sure a lot of Etsy people already know is put in the filter star seller and then just change out the word in the URL star to best. Just take out the word star, change it to best, and it'll actually pull up the bestseller filter for you. Hack. So it still exists if you know how to do this, right? And so go there, sort by bestsellers, and then just look at the product analytics on Everbee, which is my single favorite feature. Like that's if you, dude, just a side note, every once in a while, a tool comes along that is so good that I'm like, is this even legal? You know, because it just, there's so much value in it. There's so much value. One winning design that you find using a tool like Everbee, for example, can totally change a game for your business and it can totally transform your life. And so it just—
Thank you for that, man. Thank you.
Yeah,
like, I mean it, like, thank you for that. I really appreciate that. It honestly gives us, when I say us, meaning like me and the team, mm-hmm. so much validation that like we're doing the right things. Cause that was the whole goal, was to like build something that was useful and impactful for people and their life, their family, their communities, their pocketbook, literally. Right. Yeah. So like when you say stuff like that, it's like, I mean it every time I hear something like that, I'm like, ah, this is awesome. And
it's back, true, man.
And went to the legal thing. Right. I agree. I've had those experiences with other tools too. I'm just like, damn. And sometimes we get this question of like, hey, how is this allowed? You know, how is that allowed?
Right. Am I allowed to do this?
Yeah. And the way that I think about it is, it's a great question. The way that I think about it is, we're helping everybody. We're helping the sellers, obviously, understand what's selling, what's not. So we're helping them they're making good product decisions to where they can sell more products and get more money. We're helping the sellers. I'm sorry, the buyers literally have things that are built dedicated for them, right? Have more options for their product selection when they make a purchase. And then third, which is the most important in some cases for Etsy, is we're helping Etsy, because we're helping them in a couple of ways. We're helping them fill opportunity gaps, product gaps, mm-hmm. that they would never been able to fill because sellers wouldn't know about the gaps. Right. So sellers are just like, we're helping them create better products for their buyers, which is all they care about. And two, when we talk about Etsy success and people succeeding on Etsy, like literally just drives more sellers to Etsy, which Etsy loves because they want more sellers to sell more products.
Right.
So we're like in this super cool flywheel of we're helping everybody win. And then when naturally, when people win, we are just going to like, we get to carve out value of that too. And we're winning. Right. So,
right.
And then we get to like have affiliates and then like have to, and then more buyers are getting attracted to because sellers are now advertising their products on like TikTok and Instagram and all this other stuff too. So like, it's this beautiful thing that I believe adds value to everybody. So thank you for saying that. That's a long-winded way of saying it.
Absolutely. Like this tool has the potential to change lives, and it is changing lives. It's changing a lot of lives. And my students absolutely love it. And a lot of those students aren't even on Etsy. So like they love this because like I said before, one of the most critical missing pieces of the puzzle that I was finding with a lot of Shopify stores is that they were skipping the step. They were skipping the design research step. And instead they were creating like totally original abstract designs or something that they just came up with at the top of their head. Or they were finding a design on Google and just trying to improve on that, but they didn't even know if that was making any sales. And so immediately you get validation. And validation is the key. Like create for the demand, find what people want, and then create something for them that meets that demand, right? And so that's why I love this tool so much. It's so powerful. So what we will do is we'll go, let's go back to the dog example, dog shirts. You click it, you sort by bestseller, you pull up the product analytics, you sort by monthly revenue, and then you just start from the top and go down. And all of a sudden you just have a list of a lot of the best-selling products right now, not a year ago, not 5 years ago. A lot of those, they're past their prime. Like those aren't the ones you want to focus on. You want to focus on what's winning right now. And that's what I love about Everbee. It gives you recent data. And so what we'll do is we'll go down just one product at a time and then make a list of the ones that you want to use as inspiration. We never recommend stealing. It's highly unethical. It could get you in legal trouble. Just don't do it. It's not the way to build a sustainable, profitable, long-term brand. But success leaves clues. Success leaves clues. And so what you can do is you can go make a short list, save all the ones that you want to use as inspiration, and then find ways to reverse engineer the success of that product and even the listing. Like it's not just looking at the design, even though I truly believe the design is the most important thing. That's usually what invokes emotion and relatability for people and makes them want to buy something, makes them think, oh my God, I totally need this, right? Mm-hmm. However, there are a lot of other success kind of like there are a lot of other foundational things when you reverse engineer success. What style is it? Is it the Gildan 18,000 sweatshirt? We know those are super popular right now. What color is it? Is it sand? We know that neutral pastel colors, especially sand, are really popular right now. What does the mock-up look like? It's probably an Etsy mock-up, a lifestyle mock-up of someone wearing this product, which they're very appealing. Like they really do catch the eye. I think that the people that create mockups for Etsy, they know what us sellers, like they know what converts. And so they're creating high converting mockups based on what's selling, what, you know, what mockups they're selling. They're going to create more like that.
Very interesting to say that. I agree. Like I actually know some mockup sellers personally, and the majority, not the majority, these ones that I personally know, I know about three mockup sellers. They are successful print-on-demand sellers. They happen to launch a mock-up shop. And so it's like a beautiful thing because it's like founder market fit, right? Like where they are the right people to be creating mock-ups for people to buy because they actually have proven that some of these mock-ups have worked or they understand the style, the soft elements that make a mock-up actually convert. So it's a real, that's an interesting point. Dude, this is golden. I'm sure it can go on forever. But so people asking right now themselves is like, how the hell does he get traffic though? So, I got a Shopify store. I've had it for like 6 months, man. Like I got an Etsy store too, get some sales, but like, I don't know how to get traffic to my Shopify store. Do I just like write some articles and get ranked or like, what do I do? How do you answer that?
So that's kind of where the strategy differs a little bit from Etsy. So I know that a lot of Etsy sellers, they're big on volume, listing volume, using keywords to get discovered in Etsy SEO and whatnot. And one of the big differences when you're creating a brand on Shopify is you do have to drive your own traffic. That's part of the game. But there's a lot of proven strategies that can allow you to drive that traffic. So hands down, the number one recommendation, the number one kind of area we recommend people start for driving traffic is social media. And we really try to simplify this down because I think a lot of people overcomplicate it, and it does not have to be overcomplicated. So what we tell our students, our strategy is this: choose one, what we call a primary channel or a primary acquisition channel. The whole sole purpose of this channel is to acquire customers, and that is social media. It is a rented platform where you can go out there, you can put content that evokes emotion, relatability, you can attract your ideal customer, your ideal target audience, you can get them to start following you, build trust, build relationships with them, and then ideally convert them into a paying customer. So choose one primary acquisition channel. Usually we recommend starting with Instagram. I feel like Instagram was made for selling t-shirts and apparel. It's very visual. You can use in your stories, you can have stickers with clickable links. It's just kind of probably like what I believe is for most brands, the best place. It does depend on your ideal target audience, like their demographic. Sure. Maybe they're not hanging out there. Find where your ideal customer is hanging out. Where are they congregating? Go to that platform. And if you're part of that niche, you're probably already hanging out there too. Like if your ideal customer is hanging on Instagram, you're probably also hanging on Instagram, and you're probably following a lot of the same accounts and interacting with a lot of similar content, right? So choose one primary acquisition channel and choose one primary retention channel. I always recommend starting with email marketing because, like I always say, the real money is made on the owned platforms like email marketing, but no one's really talking about it. So the goal is to leverage social media to attract your ideal customer, to bring them over to your website, to incentivize them to give you their email address, and then you get to market to them over email and ideally convert them into a paying customer. And this is the strategy that we teach. So we recommend, go ahead.
Real quick, social.
Yeah.
So channel. So let's just say Instagram for now. Instagram.
One primary channel. Instagram.
Yep. Drive to website. Get their email address.
Yep.
You can now remarket to them forever. They probably won't buy on their first visit. Very likely.
Most people don't. Yep. Most people don't buy on their first visit. And that's the common, I think that's a common misconception. People, especially when you're running ads, you're driving a lot of cold traffic for the first time to your website. And a lot of that traffic is not going to convert right away. Right. They might start following you. They might start subscribing to your email address, but we've sent out surveys to customers before. And a lot of them said they bought 6 months after hearing about our brand. Like, hopefully it doesn't take that long for every customer. It shouldn't. You are going to get the emotional buyers, the impulse buyers, who the first time they see it, they're going to be like, I need this right now.
Yes.
And you're going to get a lot of those people. But you got to know that most people do not buy the first time they visit a website. This is why it's so important that you collect their email address so that you can remarket to them, provide them value, show them products that really evoke emotion, relatability for them, so they feel like your brand was made for them. And when you find that right product, when you find that winning design, that email list is going to be like a gold mine for you. Okay. You're going to send out that email with that winning design, and you're going to get a lot of validation really, really fast.
When you design for Instagram, sorry to cut you off. I think
go ahead.
In everybody's head right now, they're just like, okay, Instagram, got it. So I need to build this thing organically then? Or are you saying to run paid ads to Instagram?
So I recommend starting organically. I recommend just start posting content on Instagram. Now, keep in mind a couple of things. First, always stick to your niche, whatever your niche is. If it's dog moms, post all your content with dog moms in mind, because you want to train the algorithm to know who to feed your content to. So what you're going to do is you're going to create emotion evoking and relatable content that ideally goes viral with your ideal target audience. Not every piece is going to go viral, but what you're going to do is you're going to make sure that everything you post is about your niche, because you want to, you don't want the algorithm having to guess who to serve this to. And you're just going to go, the way that I generally recommend doing this is just like design research, do content research. So what we recommend is before creating designs, you allocate 1 to 2 hours to do design research. That's where you go into Etsy, you use Everbee, you find what people are buying right now, and then use as inspiration. We recommend the exact same strategy for Instagram. Start following accounts in that niche. Start following successful accounts, I should say. Let me just really hit home with the successful. Successful competitors, successful meme pages, successful content creators. Follow these people and allocate time to do content research. So what you're going to do is let's say you want to create 30 pieces of content for the next month. What we teach our students is allocate a couple hours once a month, go onto all these accounts, find their most viral style content, and then find a way to reimagine, repurpose, or repost that content to your page to attract your ideal target audience. And because it's pre-validated, just like your design should be pre-validated, so should your content. You're going to start drawing in. You're going to have content that ideally will start going viral, start reaching more people, and then you double down on what's working. So at the beginning, you start with this strategy. And then when you find kind of your viral style strategy, it's not the same for everyone. Some people it's reels, some people it's CapCut templates, some people it's quotes. Some people it's carousels. It can be different for different people, right? But once you find what's working, you double down. You essentially optimize your content based on what people are reacting to. And not only is this going to attract your ideal customer to your Instagram account, they're going to love what you post because they feel like this account gets them. They feel like it's so relatable to them. But you can also get design ideas on there. So if you post viral style content and people are really relating on it with it and it doesn't exist on a product, let's say it's like a funny slogan that's really specific to your niche and really relatable, you can take that slogan. I would recommend adjusting it slightly and then try it out on products. If it's validated on content and it performs really, really well, there's a good chance that it's going to perform well on a t-shirt or a mug or a sweatshirt or something like that. So it's kind of like the same idea, but one is for content and one is for design.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
It does.
I hope I haven't confused people. I hope that all makes sense.
No, I think it does make sense. And it sounds like, I'm sure a lot of people are listening to this like, damn, that sounds hard. So I got to like build this amazing like product. And I also have to build this amazing like channel for my social. And the answer is probably is like, yeah, it's not easy. I mean, but you can do it.
I mean, what I recommend to people is try to keep things simple, right? So if someone feels very overwhelmed by this, this is what I recommend you do. Just once a month, allocate a couple hours, to research top competitors, top pages, top accounts on Instagram in your niche. Save the content that you like or take a screenshot of that content. Then go into Canva, a program like Canva, and use it as inspiration for your own content. You can have your own branding in there. You can put your own handle or something like that. Batch create 30 pieces of content based on winning content, validated content, and then schedule it up for the month. You can do this all in one day and you have your content for a month. It's done. So there's content being posted maybe while you're sleeping. You know what I mean?
And they're all posted. So they're posted now. Let's just say Instagram for now. It's all linking back to your product page or your website homepage. This is something that I didn't know actually when I was younger. So
yeah, no, this is a really good question. So I generally recommend linking it to your bestsellers page.
Okay.
And the reason being is because statistically speaking, those are the products that have resonated the most with your ideal customer. And the visitors that are going to be driven to your website, most likely they're going to buy the bestseller. And so what we want is we want gold up front, like give them the best first. That's what's going to catch their eye, keep them on their website, and most likely get them to end up making a purchase. And
just to be clear, right? For anybody listening to this that's not clear is, if you have the best design you got in your shop, you want to directly link to that specific product. Is that correct?
Or
all of your products are the best. Like it could be a list.
Your bestsellers page.
So it could be 6 products on there. you're saying? Like six,
it
seven,
could be
10, nine.
It could be 20 products. It could be a couple pages. So let's say your website is doglovers.com. I'm sure that already exists, but it would be doglovers.com/bestsellers.
Understood.
That would be the link in bio that someone would click. That would take them to your bestsellers page. So right away, you're getting your best products, the ones that have had the most success, or at least the ones that you, at the beginning, if you haven't made any sales, Shopify is automatically going to create the collection for you by default. So, and then as you make sales, it's dynamic. Sure. So the best sellers will start floating to the top. And what you're going to find is that really quickly when you start making sales, all your best sellers are going to end up at the top. And those are what you want to get in front of people.
Yeah. So I agree with this, man. Like, I think that's actually a really common mistake. It's a very small mistake and it's not a big deal typically, mm-hmm. but it does make a little impact, pretty good impact, I think, over time. Is people will link to their like homepage or their about me page or something like this. And it's not optimized. Like the people already are following you, you know, they're already interested. And if they want to look about me, your story, all this stuff, they can just click over there. But like, you want to put them in front of the products to solve their problem, you know?
Totally. Totally. The reason why kind of, I could talk about this for a long time and I'll try to keep this brief, but our job as sellers is to reduce friction in the buying process. And part of reducing friction is to minimize the number of clicks people need to start shopping and see your amazing products. That's generally why they're going on your website, to see what your, you know, what your products are and ideally purchase, right? Yeah, and so when you put your homepage, a lot of the time it takes someone to a page. They're like, okay, this is just a homepage. I don't know what I'm looking at. And it requires a click in a lot of cases for them to actually start shopping. And so what we want to do is we want to reduce friction in the buying process and get them shopping right away. And what better products to put in front of them right away than your best sellers?
How do you grab an email? Like, for people wondering right now, how do you actually grab an email? Where can you do that? So you link somebody, okay, they click on a link in your LinkedIn bio. It takes them to the bestseller page, doglovers.com/bestsellers. And now how do you get their email?
Okay. So how you get their email is within the first 10 seconds, you have an email pop-up of some sort, an email pop-up, and you incentivize them for their email address. Now, there's a couple benefits to this. One, you're offering them incentives. So automatically, they're more likely to give you their email address. If you don't offer them anything, they're way less likely to give you their email. Two, it's only costing you something if they use it, right? So you're not paying anything. Let's say you give them a percentage off or a dollar amount off or free shipping. These are all different offers that you can give them in exchange for their email. They have to use that. They actually have to buy something from you in order to get the value from that incentive. So you've incentivized them for their email address, and then they're more likely to make a purchase. And now what's really powerful is that you can remarket to them again and again. So like we said before, most people do not buy the first time they visit a website, but if you capture their email address, you are significantly more likely to convert them into a customer at some point, right? Because you're remarketing to them and they chose to subscribe to email address. They raised their hand and said, yes, I want to hear from this brand. And if you're offering them value, if you're showing them products that they love, that really evoke emotion, relatability, and they feel like get them, then when you have that winning product, even if you don't have it right now, they're there. They're on standby. And if you're nurturing them through email and showing them products, when you have that winning design, the game can change for you really, really fast. And what I love about this is that if you get validation from email, let's say that you've been collecting email addresses, you've been driving traffic to your website, you've incentivized them for their email, and then you nurture them with email. And all of a sudden you drop a winning design, pre-validated, you know, you're feeling good about it, you drop it on your email list and you make 5 sales. If you're averaging 0 or 1 sales per email, that is a lot of validation. And I would immediately put some paid ads behind whatever product that was that made the 5 sales. That's a whole other rabbit hole we can go down if you want in terms of paid advertising. But generally, we like to get validation before we put money behind ads. It doesn't always have to be the case, but they're much more likely to succeed if they're pre-validated, i.e., you've made some sales in some way.
You feel better about it when you're putting money behind it anyway.
Adrian, totally.
This is we can go on all day. I was just looking at the clock. It's already been like 50 minutes. Thank you, man. Seriously, where can people find...
Oh, this is so much fun.
Where can people find you? Where can people learn more about you? Where can people follow you, learn from you, all that good stuff?
Yeah, yeah. I put out a ton of free content. So I am on Instagram at Ecom Legends Academy, exactly how it sounds. That's my Instagram account. I have a beginner coaching program called T-Shirt Legends Academy, which teaches people how to build profitable and sustainable T-shirt brands. I also have an advanced coaching program called Six Figure Founder. I have a YouTube channel. If you just type in Adrian Von Arcs, you'll find my YouTube channel. I also have a podcast, the Print on Demand Playbook podcast. We have dropped an episode every week since January 2023 when we launched. And all we talk about is print on demand. And so I would say 90% of what we talk about is applicable to Etsy sellers, especially if you are thinking about turning your shop into a brand. Beautiful. Then 100% of it will be applicable to you. But yeah, those are the places. Like, if you have any questions, DM me on Instagram. I'm really active on Instagram. I also have a TikTok at Adrian Von Arcs, but I'm actually more active on Instagram. So if you have any questions, DM me there. I have lots of free resources at the link in my bio there. And I try to put out content as much as possible because I am super passionate about this stuff. This is what I've lived and breathed for the last 9 years. And this is what's allowed me to have unlocked the freedom of my life for the last 9 years. So I truly believe there's always room for good brands. And I believe that everyone has the potential. It's just a matter of taking action, staying consistent, and truly believing that you're deserving and capable of this, which you are, by the way, but it's not enough for me to say it. You need to believe it too.
Adrian, thank you so much, man. By the way, for anybody listening, we are going to link to all of Adrian's, all of the social channels that he just mentioned. So make sure we'll check those out in the description or link or in the bio, depending on where you consume this. But Adrian, thank you so much. Really,
thank you so much. This has been so much fun.
Man, awesome. All right, I'll see you soon.
Sounds good.